bringing them out the best. Welcome everybody back to the Be Better podcast. We are we took a little hiatus there for July. A little vacation. I say it's a summer vacation for us, right?
Everybody
gets it, so we decided to take a little time off. Hopefully you didn't miss us too much. But we being Gabby and I are, not in our normal place. We're not in the, Final K Global World Headquarters studios. We are today, we're over in Little Canada, not real Canada, Little Canada, which is a little suburb kind of by Roseville in Minnesota. And we are in Step Therapies, which is a place that Gabby, you know, and it's my first time here, but beautiful space. And joining us today is Brian Epperle. Brian is a physical therapist here at Step. Brian, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
That's awesome. That's so Brian, you know, what we kind of want to talk about today is we want to talk about injuries and sports injuries. And being that you're a physical therapist, I'm guessing, and also you're an athlete, is we'll touch on that a little bit later. You have some better insight on some things here. We're hoping that you might be able to share some of your knowledge with us today.
For sure.
So we talk about triathlon a lot, kind of is our sport. Gabby, it's kind of your sport, right?
Yeah, kind of.
You're doing okay in there, wherever. So, a couple of things. So.
Yeah.
But a lot of people come to our sport of triathlon as injured athletes from single sports. I would say injured runners are one of the biggest, you know, like I would say recruitment groups for us because they get to do other things. So in triathlon, though, there are also ranges of injuries that people get, very common injuries. You know, I think of the injuries that my wife's friends have from running or that my friends have from doing sports, things like, you know, plantar fasciitis, IT band, hip injuries, lower back soreness, things like that. And, you know, I often as a coach want to be able to tell people that those are preventable things. And they also aren't like day enders. Like, you know, a lot of, I hate when people say, well, I've got this, I can't do anything. So my first question to you today would be, what are some of the most common injuries that you see coming through the door here or that you have experienced in your professional career as a physical therapist?
For sure. So I think a lot of it is kind of the weakest link is what fails. So like you said, plantar fasciitis, IT band irritation, a lot of hamstring injuries, whether that's kind of more on the lower end by your knee or up more by the glutes, or even just kind of outside lateral hip pain, really common. I think a lot of it breaks down to some weakness in the lateral hip area because that's kind of what controls you down the chain. And so then, like I said, weakest link kind of goes. So whether that's your knee starts hurting, your foot or ankle, Achilles starts hurting, I think a lot of it comes back to a little more higher up the chain, more at your hips.
So people, when they think of an injury, they a lot of times just focus on that location. So what you're saying is let's look a little bit farther back and see if there's something that's causing that maybe higher up, right?
Most definitely. I think you need to look at kind of the person as a whole. So of course you have to treat that spot because that's what's irritated, that's what hurts, and that's what people are focused on. You know, they come into you and their Achilles hurts, and you instantly start talking about their hip, and then you're like, what's going on? This guy's talking about my hip. My Achilles hurts.
Yeah.
So you definitely have to address that, but I think looking a little bit up the chain or down the chain too, you know, if it's their hip that hurts, maybe there's something a little goofy with their stride or they're overpronating in their foot a little bit, and that could cause pain up the chain a little bit, but mostly I think a lot of it kind of starts at the hips.
Okay, so the hips is kind of like the epicenter of the body.
Most
pretty
definitely.
Much, right in the center there. Yeah. So if somebody is, let's start with the person who's injured. So somebody experiences an injury like that, and it hurts, it's preventing them from doing what they want to do. What are some of the steps that you would recommend they take? Not giving them like prescriptive things, obviously, because we're not giving any prescriptions here. But like as a measure of like this is the step that I would recommend my friends to take, or that I would give suggestion to.
Sure, I would say just right off the bat, just take a day or two off and see if that makes it resolve before you do anything too drastic, and then try running, cycling, swimming, whatever you know your big activity is. And then if it's still bugging you, I think then, you know, the earlier you can get into a physical therapist or whoever you're going to see, I think that's really good because getting it early before it becomes this kind of drawn out chronic issue that you're irritating over and over and over again can make it go away a lot faster on the flip side there. And so another thing I'd recommend definitely is just not stopping completely, but continuing to do your activity, you know, to your tolerance. I always find that people get really sad and it changes their life a lot when you're like, yep, can't run, but running's such a huge part of your life.
Yeah. Like I always hear people, doctors in quotation saying, you're never going to run again. Too bad. But that's really not the case a lot of times. I think there are ways to bring people back, especially. A lot of times people end up looking to ice, heat, foam rollers, maybe compression I don't want to say a Band-Aid for something, but as like treatment for something, like a home remedy. Are there kind of rules of thumb that you use or you follow or that you give out for people as to when do you use ice, when do you use heat, when do you roll something, when do you not?
I think the rule of thumb that you learn in school is, you know, icing is used for reducing inflammation, which often occurs right after an injury happens. Your body responds by sending a bunch of blood and just to try to heal that area and protect it a little bit. So I always recommend icing right away. But once you get a couple days out, I usually just recommend whatever people like. Like some people really like ice and think it makes them feel way better. And
then I'm a fan of heat.
Yeah.
I like heat.
And yes, like Gabby said, some people really like heat.
Yep.
And so once you're a few days out, I usually just recommend whatever makes you feel best. I think a lot of those things, foam rolling, heat, ice, they're all nice. They, like you said, maybe kind of like Band-Aids. I don't think they really get exactly to the root of the problem always, but they can help make you feel better and then get you into a spot where you can start making actual physical changes.
Gotcha. I know that when you look at the heat and the ice, it's the expansion or the contraction of the capillaries to try and limit or encourage blood flow in the area. Are there any things that you say are like, don't do, like this would be detrimental to something like, let's say you get injured and you say like, I'm going to put some heat on it. Would that be detrimental to an injury? Like right off the bat?
Possibly. You know, if you have a ton of swelling or a lot of redness and irritation in something, and you're just bringing more and more blood flow to that area, that could maybe prolong that period of time where you're...
Then you'd want to ice.
But like I said, once you get a little bit out from the like initial acute injury, kind of whichever one makes you feel better is fine. But I think right away you'd probably want to avoid heat just because that would tend to bring more swelling or inflammation blood flow to that area.
How do anti-inflammatories kind of factor into that? Things like ibuprofen or aspirin.
Sure. And those are great too. Those work more kind of on a physiologic level, which we probably don't have to delve too deep into. But same kind of thing, more on a cellular level, they prevent inflammation. And that's how they reduce swelling too, is there's not as much inflammation, blood flow is going to that area, and then you get that reduction in swelling.
And those are things that people don't want to kind of become reliant on.
Yes.
Because they can have long-term negative effects, kidney damage, liver damage, things like that.
They also mess with your stomach quite a bit too. Yeah. I've had bouts of that.
Yeah.
It's no fun.
Have you ever heard of people using, this is something that I've come across, is athletes that have, they pack anti-inflammatories with them for long races. So people doing things like Twin Cities Marathon, and they're like, you know what, I'm going to take, you know, so many Advil every blah, blah, blah. I'm always a big advocate against that because people don't understand how your body's going to react, especially when you're, say, at threshold or you're in at exertion, that it's different than if you're just sitting at home watching a hockey game. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, right off the bat, I think that, you know, if you're taking Advil or Tylenol or whatever it is that frequently, or when you're running, you could probably mask some stuff. So if you're starting to get a lot of pain or something, but you've taken so much ibuprofen that you don't feel it, probably something that you'd want to avoid, because oftentimes pain is your body telling you, you know, there's something going on here, so don't just ignore it.
Yeah.
And like you said, and what Gabby said with the, you know, stomach irritation, especially when you're, you know, at threshold running
long
a
distance,
marathon or something,
yeah.
You're, the old stomach doesn't always behave, so
yeah.
I don't think you can have too much irritation, I think, is probably a bad thing, especially with the ibuprofen.
I like to think that that because I'm not a big advocate of taking medication. I don't like to take pain medication. My wife, that bugs her to no end. Like I get a cold, I don't want to take anything. First of all, because NyQuil gives me crazy weird dreams, and it's like I wake up and I just like have like it's like you know maybe like dreamt that I got beat up by a bunch of My Little Ponies, you know, while I was in a bounce house or something weird like that, right? And why that just came to my mind, I don't even know. I'm not going to make an excuse for that, but it just is. But I feel like the body needs to understand when you have pain, because that is a limiter. And if you mask it, then you're, like you said, it's like turning off all the light bulbs in your car and not understanding that your engine is overheating.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. And yeah, if you're really pushing through something, you risk injuring yourself worse, or at least kind of prolonging your recovery. I think, you know, initially to help relieve pain, let's say you have some injury and it's really impacting how you do your day-to-day stuff, so work or, you know, walk up and down the steps, take care of your kids, something like that, then, you know, if you need it for a few days, that's fine. But it's more when it becomes you're taking it on all your runs to get through it, or, you know, you're taking it for weeks on weeks. That's probably when we'd start to tend to recommend that you try to taper off of it a little bit, or we search for a different solution.
Yeah. So for in still in the treatment side of this conversation, you know, I know that the probably the one thing that I see a lot with recreational runners is a plantar fasciitis issues, and it really does seem to just kind of shut them down. For people that feel like they've tried everything out there, you know, from is it the Heisenberg sock or what is it the sock that you sleep in, the Strasburg sock.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, and like night splints, and there's all sorts of things.
I watched a lot of Breaking Bad recently, so it wasn't. But things like that. What are the things that you have seen that have been effective in the treatment for people that have like really kind of hard cases?
For sure. So there's a ton of treatment that you can get out there for plantar fasciitis, and a ton of stuff you can, you know, you can buy or you can work out or exercise. I think the longest lasting benefits, and it takes longer too, so you don't get that immediate symptom relief, but tends to be exercise and stretching, because that's what's making a permanent change to your body. So, you know, whether that's strengthening the little muscles in your foot, stretching your Achilles and making sure you have the proper muscle mobility, or strengthening up the chain a little bit, because oftentimes, you know, if you have a little core weakness or glute weakness, that is impacting how your foot is striking the ground, and then putting more stress on your plantar fasciitis, which is, or your plantar fascia, which is, you know, what kind of accepts that load as your foot pronates onto the ground.
Yeah.
But there's a million and one kind of symptom management type things, whether that's ice massage, different night splints, you know, over-the-counter custom orthotics. Here we have a physical therapist who does a lot of dry needling, which he's had pretty good results with.
I've had it done.
Yes.
It sounds terrible, but it's actually really effective.
Is there a wet needling?
Like I don't needling? Know. I think that's getting a shot or something.
Well, no, I always hear the term dry needling, and I'm like, well, like, do you dip it in, like, is there another one where you dip it in water, and it's like, or you needle somebody in the pool? Like, I don't know.
That sounds much better.
Fair question. I mean,
our particular dry needling involves electricity oftentimes, so we tend to avoid pools when
there you go. There you go. And Chris had that. So we talk about Chris. Yep. We're talking about Chris Spoth. Gabby is a person that she knows. Mm-hmm. Fair boyfriend?
Kind of.
Fiance?
No.
No, not a fiance yet. Okay, just checking. Just wasn't sure. Yeah. And Chris has had. Chris is coming back off of. Do you know Chris, Brian?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. So Chris is coming off of an injury, and I coach Chris, so we worked really hard to kind of try and keep him being able to be active, and the dry needling really worked well for him, in his recovery.
Yes.
Yeah. Calves are very painful to get dry needled, so it's not the most fun route, but definitely effective.
Yeah, dry needling is a great thing to try, just kind of an adjunct to the treatment. If it can be first line, or it can be something you try a little bit later on, but it's really good for relieving tight muscles, getting
How
things moving again.
How does it work exactly?
Sure. So there's a couple different models. So one is, most people have heard of trigger points. It's this, people envision, you know, your muscles tied in knots, or just, you know, a bump that you roll over and you're like, what is that? And it's oftentimes painful, or you can push on it, feels painful, or it feels painful somewhere else. That's called referred pain. So the original dry needling model was you'd throw a needle in that trigger point, and then you'd piston the needle up and down, and the trigger point would go away. And that's still used somewhat.
So when you say needle, like, are we talking like a like an acupuncture needle, or are we talking like a knitting needle?
So, no knitting needles, thankfully. Okay. People probably wouldn't come back. But,
yeah.
I'm asking.
Yeah, so dry needles are acupuncture, but that's basically where the similarities end. Very different kind of thoughts and research behind them, and just kind of overall physiology of how it works. Acupuncture is much more superficial, just goes kind of right under the skin. And I'm no expert on acupuncture, but dry needling will go into your muscle.
Okay.
To help make kind of a physiologic change at that level.
Mm-hmm. And you've seen that be, in your experience, that it's been beneficial and it has good results.
Most definitely, yeah. And oftentimes much quicker than something as, you know, consistent exercise or stretching will do. And that oftentimes takes weeks or months.
Yeah, it'll at least get you over the threshold. And then you can, I always believe if you can calm an area down and get you back to doing what you love, whether it's swimming, biking, running. So it'll get you over that threshold, and then you can continue trying to make some of those changes, like Brian's talking about, like doing your strengthening. Because if an area is really painful, it's kind of tough to do some of those strengthening exercises too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and a good way to phrase it, is it kind of helps you do some of that other strengthening stuff with less pain, which oftentimes makes people feel more confident in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shifting gears here, let's talk about prevention. So now let's say that somebody has not been injured, but they're trying to maintain a healthy activity, healthy lifestyle. And you know, I think stretching is always something that has a real, a misunderstood connotation. You see people like that stretch, you know, kind of a little bit more aggressively before they even start working out. That, you know, I always get worried about people getting hurt with that because they see Michael Phelps on deck and he's doing all these moves. They don't realize that he just got done swimming 10,000 meters before he does his 200-meter race. What are some of the things that you do as a – because you're an ultra-distance runner.
I just ran my first one.
Yeah. And that was at Afton, right?
It was.
Okay.
How long was it?
50 kilometers.
Why?
Why?
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. I have this crazy idea in my head that I'm gonna do a 100-mile race, so I'm just slowly working my way up.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
pretty cool.
So that's the goal, is a 100-miler.
Yes.
Leadville.
I'm eyeing the Superior Fall races up along the North Shore.
Super cool.
Yeah, I love Duluth and the North Shore, so that's what I'll go
awesome.
For. Yeah,
that's cool.
No, so what do you do to prevent getting hurt? Because obviously you don't want to come in here and have your peers work on you, because that'd be kind of...
Definitely not. That'd be embarrassing.
That'd be embarrassing a little bit. So Brian, what are the things that you do as an ultra-distance runner to keep your body healthy? Because obviously you're doing more work than most everybody else is because of the distance, the intensity, the quantity, the volume. How do you stay in good working order?
Sure. I think that old saying, variety is the spice of life, is... Mm-hmm. You can apply to a lot of endurance sports. So your body is meant to do a million and one different things, but if you do one thing over and over again and that's all you do, I think that's when you're going to get hurt, especially if it's you're kind of jumping into it. Your body's really good at responding to stuff that it's done before and then it's done a lot before. But, you know, if you just go from 0 to 60 in your training, that's a lot of times when those injuries occur.
Mm-hmm.
So I really focus on mixing up my workouts. Strength training, I think, is really important, especially for endurance athletes, because it's just such a different thing than running, biking, swimming for X number of hours in a row. And then also just mixing up the movement, whether it's, you know, whether your sport's running or biking, don't just do the same thing. So mix in other types of endurance work, cross training. And I think the strength training is really important as well.
If you're just like, let's take a person who's just a runner.
Yeah.
And they may not have access to, you know, a great bike or whatever. Is there benefit in, say, doing trail running, like on soft surface, versus trail running on a hard surface versus treadmill? Is that variance? Or what do you consider to be variance inside there?
Sure. I think that would definitely help. I mean, changing up the surface, changing up your speeds. So, you know, as far as if it's just running, I think changing up your pace, the distance, the conditions that you're running in would all make sense. But I think, you know, there's a ton of body weight stuff that you can do that's great for strengthening or stretching or any of that, where you don't need fancy gym equipment that's oftentimes perfectly adequate for your normal endurance athlete.
Gotcha. So if you had to do one sport or recommend one sport outside of running, what would be a sport that you'd recommend to kind of supplement a runner? Besides the strength training, obviously.
Besides the strengthening? I'm partial to biking. I think it's, you know, get your heart rate up. You can do it for long periods of time. There's something about working out for running for me for 2 hours that makes me feel good. And I think a lot of endurance athletes or runners feel the same way. So I use biking a lot. It allows me to get outside. I can be by myself, you know, stress relief, stuff like that. And it's similar to running in the fact that it's kind of a straight line activity, so you're constantly going forward. A lot of runners, you ask them to cut or move laterally or something, and that's where I think that's where a lot of their problems come from, is just, you know, they're always going in a straight line.
Yes.
But I think biking is, you know, takes a lot of pressure off your joints. You can do it for extended periods of time and still get that cardio, basically.
That's one thing especially for runners, I think, and all runners, I think trail running is so beneficial here, because like you just touched on, the sport of triathlon is very linear. You know, we go in a straight line in swimming, we go in a straight line when we bike, we go in a straight line when we run, and then if we run over it, we hit a pine cone, boom, your ankle's blown, and you have no stabilizer muscles, you have no way to kind of to compensate or make up for that movement. And whereas trail running, you're forced to move around, you might have some roots, you might be going back and forth. And I always think one of my favorite places to trail run is going down Bar Path in Manitou Springs in Colorado. You go up the incline, the Manitou incline, which is like 1 mile straight up at 45 degrees on railroad tracks. You got to try it. It's epic.
Sounds worth it.
Yeah. You've done it before, right?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you've got to do this. It's like one of my favorite things. So if you look on the back of my book, Pimp, 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 I wrote a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. My co-author, my friend, my bestie, Linda Cleveland, we took our photo at the top of the Manitou incline. You kind of see it's like straight down, but... So you go straight up in one big line, but you come back and it's like the zigzag, like, and it's almost like doing moguls. And I always think going down there that if somebody is a runner and they've only run a straight line, that would be, you know, you're just begging for an injury. But I see people, especially like runners out in Colorado, and that's where a lot of pro athletes live and train. You see them running those trails, and I can't help but think that has to stabilize and make somebody a little bit more bulletproof from an injury standpoint.
I think too, even just the simple act of adding in like gravel, I mean, the soft surface is great, number one, for your body, but also like running on gravel, you might not feel it right away, but it does work those tiny little muscles in your feet, which do help stabilize us. I think feet are highly underrated.
Yeah.
So you're a foot person.
Yeah, I think, I mean, your feet are important. Take it whatever way you want.
No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah. You know, if you look at, And let me tell Brian, let me know what you think about this too. I always hear about athletes saying, you know, oh, I got recommended to take these buy these shoes and put these orthotics in because I have, you know, I've got like weak arches or something. And my comeback is like, well, you break your arm, you put a cast on, you take it off, you let your arm heal. To put orthotics on like a weak arch is basically like, you know, never taking a cast off. And I think that's the same thing. You look at the foot, the foot was designed originally to run without a shoe on, and there's so many little small muscles and all the bones and that it almost is like a leaf spring on an old car, and it's made to accept all those different types of motions. And if you don't use those, I guess it's kind of a if you don't use it, you lose it scenario.
Yeah, your foot is definitely designed to accept load and then kind of spring back. That's a lot what that plantar fascia does, is it stiffens your foot as you're about to push off. And so I just graduated PT school a few months ago, so hopefully I'm up on the latest research, but we learned they've done all these studies on, because plantar fasciitis is just so common, so they've done all these studies and they put people in all these different orthotics, and they found the people that have the best long-term results are the people that just pick the shoes that are most comfortable to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that it doesn't alter their gait from what their, you know, ideal gait would be. So oftentimes you put people in these crazy orthotics or new shoes or whatever it is, and then their gait changes a little bit, and that puts stress that their body's not used to, and then they injure something else, or they continue to stay injured. So I always just recommend my patients that they wear whatever feels comfortable for them.
I think I actually read that article. It was from the British Institute of Medicine, and it was a study on what was the most important thing for shoes. And I think number one was comfort, just general comfort and fit. That it fit your toe box, that it fit your heel, that it just actually fit well. And I think number two was color. I could be wrong.
It's gotta be cute.
If it doesn't match your outfit.
Look good, feel good.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's a good point. It's not Americans, we are oversold shoes so often. You know, we get bars and we get air and gel. It's like
everything. We're looking for the next best thing.
If you think about how much load actually comes down on the foot, it's, you know, what I've always read is that it's three times your body weight that is during a run stride, that when you transfer from impact to load, that it's three times your body weight. And
Yeah, most definitely. It's pretty crazy, like, how much just those little foot bones and muscles can accept. And, you know, some of it's up the chain as well through your knees and your hips, but it's crazy. It's multiple times your body weight. I think just Americans in general are kind of suckers for marketing, so they're always looking for the next best thing, and, you know, this is what's going to solve my plantar fasciitis. But
yeah,
in the end, oftentimes, it's just getting down to some exercise and
getting
strengthening and improving your mobility.
Getting taken care of. And it's frustrating getting injured. You know, So a little story. I herniated the disc between my L5 and S1 over Christmas this year. And it lost the use of my right leg for a period of time. And the herniation was, it started off with the preliminary, I would say, signs of it were some sciatica that was coming down the right leg. And I didn't know what that was because I never had experienced that before. I'm like, oh, it must just be some tightness there. And again, I was treating it down like right above the knee when, in fact, it was lower back issue. Went in, MRI, blah, blah, blah. But I was able to come back 100% without having surgery or injections, which, you know, when we talk about like quick fixes for Americans, many times it's like, oh, I need to get a shot, or I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna go in and just, you know, cut something out. Whereas the body can heal itself, even as an old guy like me, you know, you can with the proper care, because I went through, you know, I went through a PT, I went through my chiro, and it was very aggressive, but I did, you know, a compression bed for a number of months, and actually came back to full recovery without having any of the other things that, you know, have permanent consequences like surgery or injections. Mm-hmm. So I'm a firm believer in what you do, and I'm just kind of trying to reaffirm that. So
yeah, that's awesome to hear. It's good to hear the success stories, most definitely, and try to pass those along to people and
mm-hmm.
The PT and chiropractors and all of those kind of movement and body-oriented fixes can work.
Gabby, what was the last time you were hurt?
Oh, well, I mean, I've certainly had my fair share of niggles, little things that pop up here and there. So I've struggled with anything from Achilles to hamstring, lower back. What else have I struggled with? I guess I'd like to think I am injury prone, but I'd like to think it was because I spent, I don't know, 12 years of my life swimming with no load. So once I added load, my body kind of had a hard time accepting it.
Yep.
And I wanted to do more than my body would allow.
So you kind of, you were getting a little aggressive with it.
Yeah, when I first started.
Yeah.
So now it's just kind of learning. When these niggles do pop up, and they will, and they'll continue to pop up, it's just learning how to get on top of them right away and learning how to work with them within my training without getting paralysis from analysis.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. What are some of the things you do on a daily basis to prevent injury? I know Brian and I talked about some things. What are some of the things that you do as a high-level elite athlete that keep you in the game, because you put a lot of load and a lot of stress on your body,
mm-hmm.
And you seem to be doing pretty well with that. So obviously we're looking for, what's the secret sauce?
Well, I do think the more I've done it, the more I kind of learn where my weak spots, where my tight spots are. So as much as the injuries sucked, they also kind of taught me where my weak spots are, which is kind of awesome. So I've learned that my calves are really tight, so I try to stretch my calves every day, roll my calves every day. I know that's a big problem area for me. But that also means strengthening-wise, I'm doing eccentric calf raises all the time. So it's kind of learning different areas that have bothered me in the past and being really in tune with them.
Yep.
So kind of listening to my body, honestly, has been the biggest fix for me in terms of learning what to treat or what to do.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha. Brian, you guys have an Alter G here.
We do.
Have you used that before yourself?
I have, yes. Not as much for training, just to kind of familiarize myself with it. But it's a cool piece of technology and definitely can be used by a lot of different types of athletes.
And for people that don't know what an Alter G is, you should, first of all, go Google it, because you can.
It's like running on the moon.
It is. Well, it's an anti-gravity treadmill, essentially.
Yes.
It's basically a big balloon that on a Woodway treadmill that can remove by I would say by design percentages of body weight as you run, right?
Exactly. Yes. I think Googling it is a great option because it's kind of hard to picture, but
yeah.
Your standard treadmill surrounded by a giant plastic bubble that goes up to your waist.
So you wear some pretty awesome spandex shorts.
Yes, yeah, definitely recommend wearing tight-fitting shorts to your PT appointment. Otherwise, you get some gnarly bunching going on.
And some swass.
But yeah, it's great. See, it's adjustable, so it comes up to about hip level, the bubble, and then it calibrates, and then you can adjust by percentage how much weight will be through your legs. So you could go from, it starts at 100, so full body weight, and you can go all the way down to zero, which you're basically just floating there.
Yeah. And that's a great tool for coming back from injury or being able to stay active for people that can't accept full load on either one extremity or both. Is that right?
Most definitely. Most of those overuse injuries come down to the tendon. So where the muscle transitions to the tendon, which attaches to the bone, which causes things to move, is that being irritated. And tendons heal by having load through them. So all the tendons, all the cells and parts of it are in a straight line, but when it heals, they lay down all mismatched. And so to get that back into the straight line where that tendon can accept the most load, you need to load it. Otherwise, it doesn't heal properly. But oftentimes, jumping from, you injure something, you take a little break, and then jumping right back into it, it's too much. So the Alter G allows you to keep running, keep walking, get some cardiovascular training in, but at a lower percent of your body weight where you're not going to irritate.
I've used it during an injury and coming back from an injury before, and it's been really helpful because you can easily progress from, even if you're at 50, 60% body weight, and then you're all the way up to 90 and you feel like you can run again. So it's really effective and helpful because you can still work on your stride, you can still work on your foot placement, but you're not loading body too much.
And that was something we were using with Chris and my prescription for him. I actually was able to, as a coach, prescribe workouts with speed, but at specific body weight. Because I remember that would be part of our prescription for him, was that I want you to be at a certain amount of body weight doing certain intervals. And it allowed him to kind of not, I think, both physically stay active, but also mentally not go into this place where he feels like he's just not doing anything. For people that maybe don't have accessibility, that might be listening to us, that don't have an Alter G around them, are there other ways to simulate that? Like, would be like deep water running, would that help simulate something along that lines? Or
it would, yeah, that would unweight you, but then you're also dealing with the water and the drag from the water, so this is awesome. It's air, so it just feels like, it literally feels like you're lighter, so you're on the moon. A little undescribable unless you actually experience it, so it doesn't change your gait at all, but definitely water would be an option, or swimming, biking, something that doesn't load the joints quite as much. But this allows you to be very specific, so if running is what you're looking to get back to, then this allows you to run.
All right.
Instead of changing the activity you're doing.
And if you don't have access to an Alter G, I've done pool running in my past as well. So I think if you are going to take the pool running route, deep water running is very effective. Just wear a belt and make sure you're conscious of your form and your feet.
Yeah, that is the good point. But with the deep water running, especially if you're like saying in a diving well, it feels like you have to remember like how to move your legs.
Yep. You've got to relate it to running on the ground. So even though you're in a pool, you've got to picture yourself in the ground, that forward lean.
Yep.
Good foot placement. So you can still
It's works. Boring.
It's boring as all get out.
Yeah.
I always recommend to people, bring your underwater headphones if you can. Otherwise, you might go. A little
stir crazy. Except I have done that. I've tried that where you go around the diving well and you're
count
just slowly
times.
Going around the exterior and everybody's looking at you like, what are you doing?
You
just idiot. They say that to me all the time though, Brian. That's
making a tornado in the center of the pool. That's what I'm doing.
I'm peeing in a big circle.
Perfect, yeah.
I'm spreading it all around.
Once I go around
once. Yeah. Then go the other way. Yep.
It works out well. Well, Brian, thank you for inviting us in here to Step Therapies, and thank you for sitting down with us and sharing some of your insight. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
So we have a website, steppt.com. Otherwise, just Google us. You can find our phone number, address. Otherwise, just give us a call. We can give you our email address if you feel more comfortable with that, or just stop in. We're here. A small little private practice, so we try to be really friendly.
What's the phone number here?
651-766-0080.
All right. Want to get it on record. And Step Therapies is STEP Therapies.
Yes.
Yep.
All right.
And Little Canada.
And Little Canada. That's not Big Canada.
No, Little.
No Canucks here.
Much closer to home.
Much closer. Well, thank you. And everybody, thanks for joining us again. Apologize for being on vacation. Not sorry that we're sorry about that, or something along that line. So anyways, thanks again for listening. We look forward to talking to you guys again very soon. See you, bye. You know what I'm saying? So keep them safe. No, cause they don't really know about this thing we got. There's things between me and you, so keep them safe. Cause they don't have to know. No, they never seen a love like ours. Cause there's things between me and you, so keep them safe. Say